God,
Grant
grant
me
me
the
the
serenity
serenity
to
to
accept
accept
the
the
things
things
that
that
I
I cannot
cannot change,
change,
the
the courage
courage
to
to
change
change
the
the
things
things
that
that
I
I
can,
can,
and
and
the
the
wisdom
wisdom
to
to know
know
the
the
difference.
difference. The Simple Action Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to our meeting? All right, welcome if you're shy. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Forward to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step one, part two. Please welcome our panel, Kirk and Rhett.
Nope.
I will read the first paragraph on page 51, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. Step one, we admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Page 51. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply don't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had to take it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder if such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills, and now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone, and in no time I was beating on the bar asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. Kirk?
Yeah, my name's Kirk and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kirk.
I love this little piece that we just read. I love that just I woke up, like the recognition that I got a problem here. And it's gotta be stopped. Cannot take so much as even one drink. And I when I think back to my own early days of drinking, for me in step one. Could definitely identify there was a lot of unmanageability in my life pretty easily. I mean, there was not one area in my life that I could point to and say, you know what? I got this under control over here. My relationships were bad, my finances were bad, everything was bad. But I did not, perhaps not even consciously, maybe subconsciously, I just didn't understand my powerlessness really. Or I wasn't willing to admit it. Because I couldn't imagine what my life would be without alcohol in it. So kind of like what he did here is I tried a lot of different times. As time went on, the unmanageability became more and more and more apparent. Kind of realized something had to be done about it. And I made some sincere attempts, kind of like what he's talking about here. He wrote a lot of sweet promises, and his wife actually observed he really meant business this time. And I love that because what he's saying here to me is, I woke up, I realized I have a problem, but I still think that I know how to fix this problem. I'm still running on my own self-sufficiency here. And I see that through here. Because he means business. He's sincere, not understanding the dilemma that he's facing. It's kind of like what I did in my own experience. I did not understand the problem that I was facing, really. I knew my life was a mess. I knew that I drank a lot and I liked to drink, but I did not know what my real problem was at that point. That I had a mental obsession and a physical compulsion. Nobody ever said that to me. Nobody ever pointed out that I perhaps have a disease that I'm suffering from. So I didn't understand that, and it same doesn't sound like Bill does here either. As he says, he meant business. He was sincere, but shortly afterward, he's drunk again. Because he didn't understand apparently this time what his dilemma was either. He's still thinking that his resolve is going to be enough. He asked himself, "Was I? Am I crazy?" And I think that's a great point because that's where the insanity for me is in taking that first drink. The insanity of taking the first drink and then not being able to stop. Even though you have a sincere desire to stop, you can't. Or I can't, I should say. And that was true for me. And then I'm going to try again, renewing his resolve. Some time passed. He got confident and still in that self-sufficiency. And he started thinking he had it, and I could tell you my whole life went like that for a very, very long time. Sincerely wanting to stop, recognizing I have a problem, recognizing the unmanageability in my life, but never understanding that I could not fix the problem myself. Never understanding that, always thinking that I could if I just manage better next time. And that is kind of how my life went for a long time, and through my time of drinking. So I'll stop there.
That was great. Well said. Yeah, I think when I was reading it, kind of preparing for this meeting, I was thinking back. And I always tell the story. The first time I drank, I remember I after that first night, I knew I had done something that was, I didn't really care that it was, in fact, I didn't care at all that it was, I was 15. I don't remember how old I was, but I knew that after that first time that I had crossed the line, that I just was like, I had done something that was really, really wrong, like on a fundamental level. Like I had never done, I done, was a bad kid for sure. But when I took that first drink, I remember waking up that next day and it was like, I just crossed a line I should have never crossed. And I think I knew right from that moment that I just could not control drinking, and it led to drug use and all that stuff. But I would just say that, yeah, that's what it was like from a young age. I just had that mental obsession with alcohol, and it was spree drinking at first. I mean, some people share stories, and it wasn't my experience that I was drinking every day in high school or things like that. But my experience was that I would just, when I drank, it was like to the max. And then as I got older, it would just, these sprees would get worse and worse. And thinking about this, I remember I used to write contracts with people, and I was like 20 years old writing these contracts because I was doing such awful stuff, and I meant these things. I really would sign these to my girlfriend or girlfriend at the time, and I would say, "Look, I promise, signed and dated, I'm never going to drink again." And I really would mean that stuff. And this gets thrown around. Everybody can Most people, I don't want to speak for everybody, but most people in here can experience that. I mean, it's like a sincere and heartfelt expression that look, I'm not going to do this darn thing again. I promise you that I won't drink. And it's so demoralizing. It's just awful because it happens, and then it's like, here we go again. And that obsession for me led me to some awful places, and I'm so grateful to be out of it. And I just, if I'm thinking back to, second, if I'm thinking to, yeah, he just talks about that resolve. And there were times when I'd get 6 months. I remember one time I did get 6 months. And I remember the first time I drank after that 6 months, I drove drunk that night. And it was just like, and it was, I got sober pretty young. I got sober at 25. So it was like, I was really young then, and I wrestled with all these feelings about, what's my life going to be like? And it's, I can't imagine what I would do without knowing how awful all this was. What am I going to do without alcohol? So when people say that, I have great empathy for them because people do mention what's it going to be like. And it's like, well, if you take this path and this way of life, it'll be way better than anything you could ever imagine. But yeah, it's that obsession. And the only, it's hard to explain to people that maybe aren't one of us, or that maybe don't fully understand alcoholism, but it's just, it's overriding. It's like, I've got to do this. And once I start doing it, the allergy kicks in and I really can't stop. And it's going to go where it's going to go. And most likely, it's not going to go real well for me or for anybody else. And so when I was asked to share on this, it was, this is something I like to talk about. It's been a while since I've, had to experience that, but kind of thinking back and reliving those in my head as I was preparing for this, it's like, man, that used to really. I just get so worn down by that, and I get just the how bad I would feel. So I just have great empathy for people that slip or that have a mess up, or certainly anybody out there that's kind of living in this right now, because there's a lot of people. And it's like, the longer I've been sober, and there have been points in times in my AA attendance and all that has kind of waxed and waned. And I about a year ago, I was like, man, I got to really this. I'm doing kind of checking the box, and this is not the way to do this program. So that's why I've gotten real, real active in the last year, and I'm so grateful I did. And it's, you get sober for a while and you forget that this thing is real. There's a lot of people out there struggling, and it will kill you or do really bad things to you if you don't. It's undefeated. It'll win. You can't take it on and beat it. So that's why I'm here. And yeah, that obsession, it was overriding. So
Thank you
thank you.
both.
Yeah, thank you.
Next reading will be on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly, even made a little money. Surely this was the answer. Self-knowledge, Kurt.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to me. So, and it starts off recognizing he's got a problem, makes some promises he's gonna get it under control, keeps failing at that. And now he thinks that he's saying, he gets a little bit of he finds a little hope here, because he finds out that, he may have a strong will in some areas, but when it comes to alcohol, he does not. And, now that he understands himself, he's got a little bit of hope that he's going to get this thing under control. And for 3 or 4 months, he stays sober. And he believes that self-knowledge is the answer. And that's, it's to me, when I read this, I'm thinking, hey, we're going down the checklist here of this is still self-reliance. It's like he's still trying. Depending on himself to figure this thing out. The self-knowledge is going to do it this time. And how does that relate to my own story? Is, again, around this whole powerlessness thing and not really understanding it. It's taken me a very long time to truly understand what it means when I say I'm powerless over alcohol. I should let me take that back. I'm powerless over alcohol because I know for sure if I take a drink right now, I'm not going to stop drinking until I'm plastered. And then I know tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm going to start thinking about what time I can start drinking tomorrow and what corners I can cut in order to get to alcohol. And that's how my life will instantly become that way. But this whole idea about self-knowledge and powerlessness is it's this idea that I cannot fix this problem myself. And that was what I just couldn't seem to wrap my arms around for the longest time. I wasn't willing to give up the good fight for drinking more alcohol. I'm going to figure this thing out somehow. And maybe, I don't ever remember a time where I can say I've said to myself, self-knowledge is the answer. But I just know that for me, I just kept trying different tactics, and it talks about it in the books. Just going to drink on the weekends, just going to change what I drink, and all these different things that we do. And somehow figure it out because, man, I love to drink, in spite of what it was doing to me. It's the very thing that was destroying my life. I was terrified to let go of. And I just couldn't imagine it and what my life would be like without it. And so kind of like what Bill's doing here is I just kept going along, thinking maybe this time I'll get it figured out some way, somehow. But I never have, until I finally reached a point where I understood that I can't fix this problem. I will never be able to fix this problem. I'm completely powerless over this problem. And that is the place where it talks about in the 12 and 12, the bedrock on which a purposeful, happy and purposeful life can be built. Because once I get there and I realize pretty much I'm screwed. I got a problem I can't fix. So what am I going to do next? What do I do here? So that's what I got on that. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. I never really had a problem admitting I was an alcoholic. I mean, I knew again from the first time that it was bad, and as I got older and had more experiences, it was so obvious to me that this was not something I had any kind of real control over. Of course, I tried. I remember, it was young. I remember I was working a job and I was part time, and I was had a budget for alcohol that was just. I mean, it was like silly. I was probably 18 or 19 years old, and I'd get my paycheck, and I was like, I can spend this. And you guys can imagine how well the budget was kept. You talk about finances not being very good. It wasn't kept very well. All to say that those were those little, now looking, it's like in retrospect, I guess, self-knowledge is not the end, but I can look back on some of this and it's like, I was really, it's so funny because, the more I've been in the program and I've read the book so many times now and, all that good stuff. And it's like, Bill's story really is, I mean, you take out, there's details, who cares about that stuff? But the idea is like, what he's saying is like, this has been my experience, is like I just tried to manage this thing, really not even in a rational manner. It was so obvious to me and everyone outside of me that, hey, this is a problem. It's like danger, danger. And I didn't really give up on the idea that I couldn't drink until some really awful stuff happened. And then it was like, I can't do this anymore. I wanted to stop so many times, and that was the real like tragedy of all this, is I just remember that it was just, you talk about will. I did have it says the will is strong in other areas. Yeah, my will to drink was really, or to not drink was really strong, and it would just, it would collide with alcoholism, and alcoholism will always 100% win that battle. And it's like even now people are like, you have such good willpower, and it's like, no, you should see the screen time on my phone if you want to see how good my willpower is. No, I'm kidding. But you really, the idea is that like. I don't have very good willpower. That was actually like thinking I could do this on will was the disaster. But when I admitted I was alcoholic, that gave me an out, and that was the best thing I ever could have had, because I truly was baffled by this. And we're not talking about the befuddlements and all that right now, but I was truly baffled by this, and it was like, I can do this other stuff and I can succeed in this area. Why can't I just keep this drinking under control? I truly had no idea. Now I look back, it's like, well, geez, I was an alcoholic. No, duh. It's really quite simple. So I will say that, yeah. And I guess another thing I've been thinking about is, this is, I don't think it's in the book anywhere, but my experience in the program has just been, I've seen this aspect trip more people up than about anything. It's that holding that, like, I don't know what you want to call it. It's like holding the one last spree in your head, like, oh, I'm not a real alcoholic. I can manage it, I can control it. So when I try to talk to people about alcoholism, it's like, are you really holding something back in the back of your head? Like, you got to really come to terms with this. And if you come to terms with this, there's implications about alcoholism, and there, thank God, there is a solution to it, because self-will and self-knowledge and willpower and all that stuff, well, it will help me in many areas of my life, and it has helped me. I was totally defenseless against alcoholism. So that's all I have on that one.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Next reading is on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Kurt.
Yeah, so eventually, for me, after a while of trying and failing and destroying just about every relationship that I had in my life and being down to almost nothing materially, I thought maybe I try a rehab. And if I go into a rehab, then certain people will think, "Hey, Kirk's trying to do a little something about his problem. Maybe we'll go a little easy on him." Thinking to myself, I might regroup a little bit here. I just need to get a little time, just get a little break here, and then I'm gonna figure this thing out. But I did not go into rehab intending to completely get sober. Now, there were some things that went along with alcohol that seemed to be problematic, some drugs and things, and I thought maybe that. But I just need to kind of lay low for a little bit, and that's my new plan. And it says. It says in here that old threadbare idea that this time we're going to handle ourselves like other people. I guess I kind of thought maybe I could do that. Still wasn't willing to admit defeat yet, even after all that. Now, I will say this: when I went to this, I went to a treatment center that some of you I may have heard before, a little place called Serenity Lodge, and I went into Serenity Lodge, and they brought meetings in there, had AA and NA meetings that came into the facility, and they were also open to the public, so anybody could come to these meetings. It wasn't just for the like some of these other places you see now. So, I actually was kind of taken aback because I was my idea of AA before was, I don't know about that. I don't know if I really want to be going to someplace, hanging around with a bunk. I remember one time my mom was like, "You know what? I hear these AA that they have picnics on the weekends and stuff." I was talking to myself, "Oh my God, just give me a gun right now." I mean, going to some picnic with a bunch of old drunks, Now I'd love to do it, but I just it just I had this image in my head. It's just not where I want to be or what I want to do. And but when I actually met some people that are in the program, it started to change. These people are pretty cool. Some of these people are pretty cool. And I started thinking to myself, "Hey, maybe just maybe I could get sober. Maybe I could try this myself." And but that was the first time I had an inkling about maybe trying it. But there was still more to come for me because I didn't stay sober after I got out of there. And I think it's still the same old thing as I still didn't really understand my dilemma at that point. So that's what I got on that.
Yeah, that was great. So yeah, I mean, I always used to joke. It was like I take one sip of Mike's Hard Lemonade, and it would just like it was always a joke. It was like the weekend would end up like God, and it was like the most benign thing to drink, and it would just end up in this like total chaos weekend. And I used to like when he says that right there, and it's like the most certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazily and ready supplanted with the old threadbare idea. This time we shall handle ourselves like other people. I'd pretty much given up on that idea that I was going to drink like anybody normal. Really, especially when it got bad, because there's a lot of outside issues were involved and all that stuff, and it would not here to talk about any of that. But the idea, it would just feed into each other, and it was just this like circle of insanity. And I just remember giving up on it, and it was like, let's just see where this goes. And yeah, I mean, I of course I wanted to stop, and I was just so beaten down, and it's like I've heard it said best. It's like when I drink, like I'd like that I get thirsty, and that's how I best describe alcoholism. If anybody really wonders what it's like, it's it right there. And I guess if we're talking about AA, I used to come, I'd get in trouble, and I'd go to meetings, and I wasn't even against AA. I just wasn't done at that time. I was really young. I didn't feel like I was done. I remember going in there, and there'd be times I'd get in there for a month or two. I never got a sponsor, and I always used to say, like, they weren't really talking about the solution in there, because I got really militant about this for a while. Don't ever get militant about it. That's the most annoying. I did that for a while, like I knew something about anything. That's ridiculous. I didn't know anything. So I will say, I used to say that, but I just don't think I was listening. I think a lot of those people in there were very nice, and they were probably just like these meetings where we are talking about the solution, like they do in a lot of meetings. And when I got into this meeting and I got really sober, I do remember my sponsor, he came up to me and he said, "Do you want to be a free man?" And I was like, "That sounds really great." He's like, "Well, if you do this, you can be a free man." And that was so appealing to me because I thought, there's really no way I want to live my life where it's like, I can't go here, I can't go there, I can't do this, I can't do that. Because I knew at that point in time, I knew it was either, I can continue. I got basically at a fork in the road because it's like, I can do this. A lot of people in here seem really nice and normal and reasonable, and I can relate to a lot of them. Or I can try this, and this has not worked. I don't think it's going to work again. And I got in some trouble, and that's a story for another day. So thankfully there were some like consequences and all that. So I kind of at the time it was awful, but now looking back, it was really the best thing that ever happened to me. So I just tell that to people too. It's like if you got some legal trouble, you got something going on, it just could be God maybe working a miracle in your favor. So don't get. I know it sucks when you go through it, and it's like these things are awful. But when you get further enough past it, you can look back and like, man, that's thank God that that happened because what I have now, what I had then is like that doesn't hold a candle to what I have now. So I will say that was basically my experience with that. Is I just got with this guy, and he was really, a big book thumb. We're still friends. I haven't talked to him for a while. I know he's doing well though, and he just basically showed me that there was another way of life, and that's what's taken over. And I haven't had a drink for, well, I don't know, it'll be 16 years in December, so I'm really grateful for that. And it's really been quite the ride, and it's really been a wonderful thing. And I'm forgetting what the question is, so I'll just pass it along to the next one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next reading, page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we are real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of the illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learn that we had to be fully conceded to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Yeah, I guess this kind of summarizes the points that I've been trying to make, however, staggeringly along my way. But yeah, it's, I just didn't want to admit that I couldn't drink like other people. I guess, and this illusion is astonishing. It's to many pursue it all the way to the gates of insanity or death, because it just, and I can totally relate to that. The delusion that we are like other people has to be smashed, and so for me in this, I got sober the first time quite a long time ago, and I spent I got sober for 8 years in 12-step recovery, and then after that, I stayed clean for another 16 years through going to church. I was at 8 years sober. I started feeling like something was missing in my life, and I couldn't really figure out what it was. I couldn't put my finger on it. And looking back now, and what I've learned over the last year, I was kind of restless, irritable, and discontent in recovery. But I didn't recognize that at the time, just like I didn't recognize that I had a problem I couldn't fix while I was drinking. So I had some, looked around, asked some questions to people, and I don't have time to tell my whole story right now, but I decided to turn my life over, accept Christ into my life. I started attending a church. I absolutely loved it. I got heavily involved there, and then my wife started going as well. We had just been recently married. We got a new house. We just had a baby. I started a new business. I quit going to meetings. I quit going to meetings altogether because I didn't feel good about coming home after working 15 or 16 hours. My wife was a stay-at-home mom at the time, and say, I'm all heading off to a meeting now. Plus, I felt like, my spirituality was being nourished where I was. So I quit going to meetings. I stayed sober 16 years practicing my faith there. But then once things went south in my marriage, and when that happened, things started getting bad because my wife decided to leave. I became a single parent of two school-age kids. Things got really weird at church because we were always a couple there, and then people didn't, all of a sudden they didn't know what to say. It was awkward. I didn't know what to say, and I did what I do with my MO is I started to withdraw, and started missing Sundays. I quit my morning times. I quit giving. And finally, I quit serving, and I just quit going altogether. And so here I was hanging out, 24 years in. No 12-step, no kind of support whatsoever based on my own choices, admittedly. But we went on a little family vacation out in Emerald Isle, and my kids' lives were falling apart. I mean, I was constantly every day I'm getting a call, and so your daughter Ivy did not come to school or was late, and it's like everything's falling apart. I was powerless to fix it, and I was in enormous pain. I didn't know what to do about it. So when we were on that vacation, I decided I'm gonna have a drink, and I did. And after that, I drank for 5.5 years, and finally made it back in. And the reason I want to say that, tell you that piece of it is, we never will regain the ability to control our drinking as alcoholics, ever. It's not going to happen. And at that point in my life, I didn't really care. It wasn't, I didn't, I wish I could say, anything other, but the truth was, I didn't care. I wanted a drink, and that was it. I wanted some relief, and I thought alcohol would give it to me. But I couldn't control it again. I just couldn't control it. And after 5.5 years, something had to give. Something had to give because it was once again, everything was a mess. I was really, really unhealthy. I was at the point where I was like, if I don't do something, I'm just going to keel. I'm going to be dead. I'm going to wake up because I would wake up every day sick. Until I had a drink, I weighed over 300 pounds. My blood sugar was through the roof. I only kept the job because I didn't report to a job site, and I managed to, alcoholically weasel my way into keeping a job. But I just can't. I said I'm gonna. I had two kids still. Like, I'm gonna be dead here one day. I'm gonna just drop dead in my 50s if I don't do something. So I finally did, but. It talks about this incomprehensible demoralization in here, and I think that's a good turning the big turning point, because after that 5.5 years, I got sober again for a year and a half, and in that year and a half, I came back here. I didn't drink alcohol. I went to meetings. I had a sponsor that I didn't use. Things outside of my life got amazing. Fixed my house up and sold it. I quit my job. I got two businesses. I got in great shape, and all this stuff was happening. It was fantastic, but I was never working the steps because I still didn't understand. I have a spiritual dilemma. I have a spiritual malady of total, complete self-centeredness. And looking back now, that year and a half was all about me, and I didn't even see it. So guess what? I ended up drinking again after that because I was still. In spite of all this great stuff happening in my life, I had this inner thing. I was just dissatisfied. I can't figure this out. I still don't feel good. And in the end, then I bounced in and out. And at the end, it didn't matter. If I was drinking, I was miserable. If I wasn't drinking, I was miserable. I was miserable all the time because I didn't understand that I had a spiritual malady that only could be fixed by a power greater than myself. And that's where I finally got to that place of incomprehensible demoralization where I realized I didn't even want to be alive anymore. I just beat down so far. And so it's a good thing in a way because that is where I feel like I finally came to realization of what my real problem was. I'm an alcoholic. I have a mental obsession. I have a physical compulsion that's never going to go away. I can't fix it. I never will be able to fix it. And I have a spiritual malady of complete and total self-centeredness. And until I understand that I can't fix this problem, and I need help from some power greater than myself, nothing's ever going to change. And I will never feel peace or happiness in my life. And it talks about that even at 12 and 12. I'll quickly say this, it's only through utter defeat are we able to take the first steps toward liberation and strength. Our missions of personal powerless turn to be the firm bedrock on which happy and purposeful lives can be built. I never had a happier, purposeful life all that time. That's it. That's
Right
what I got.
on. Yeah, I think as you're talking, I'm thinking about this, and it's like I think the core of this is, I didn't talk about this earlier, but the idea was that I never really felt comfortable in my own skin. And it's like the only solution, I drugs and alcohol were the only really way I ever found out of that. And well, obviously Alcoholics Anonymous has helped greatly with that. I will say that. But it's like, yeah, I can't drink like a normal person because I like the effect produced by alcohol. It's gonna any of the insecurities I feel about myself, or any just the general discomfort or disease, or just that kind of misery you're talking about, a really quick and easy and simple way to make that go away is to take a drink. Obviously, if you can't control drinking, it's gonna compound and get out of control really quickly. So that really is the dilemma that we're left with here. It's like, again, I talked earlier about that, the forks in the road, and it's like there's either you can the one path is that we truly fundamentally know must we you must we I we must understand that we cannot I cannot drink like a normal person. It's just not possible. When I say a normal person, there's no way. I just have no power, choice, or control on a consistent basis. Of course, there were times when I would only have what I mean, there were instances when I would maybe have one or something. I don't recall any. I guess I don't know why I said that, because I don't. Never mind. I don't know why I said that. Scratch that from the record. With that said, yeah, I really could never control it. So it's like we have these options. And as you're talking about this, I'm just kind of you're making me really reflect on my life, because it's like I said, about a year ago, I had a kind of a cruddy day, and it was just two things happened. Neither of them were that big of a deal, and they just really threw me for a loop. And it's like I'm a sensitive person, and I just remember, some people in here can probably relate to that. And I take things too seriously sometimes, and I think things are personal, and just some things happened, and they weren't even that big of a deal. And I remember I was couldn't sleep that night, and I was laying in bed, and that's what I talked about. I was kind of doing that bare minimum thing with AA, where I was going to one meeting a week with a bunch of guys who'd been sober for 15 years, and it was great. We talk about, my life is great. Although there were part like my I guess my job was going really well, but there were times I was not feeling too good inside. But I was going to these meetings and saying like, oh, I think things are good, and it's like, yeah, on the surface or materially things are fine, but if I was being real honest with myself, I was this huge part of my life, why I have everything I have, I was doing quite literally the bare minimum at it. Again, I was doing one meeting a week, and it was like, check. And like, that is not the way to do this program. I will tell you, that's the way. In my experience, I can't speak for anybody else, that's a way to kind of get into that misery and that disease. And I never forget, it was like, or maybe it was not, it was February, now that I'm thinking, it was February. So it was almost a year. I should say that. I was laying in bed, and I woke up, and it was like this voice came to me, and I was like, what am I going to do? And God said, go help the suffering alcoholic, go work with the suffering alcoholic. And I started getting back involved and going, doing into treatment centers and going to more, and just really kind of checking back into this program. And it's like, it's been such a wonderful thing. And I'll even say, even like as soon ago, or Labor Day was not that long ago. And it was like, I remember I was walking to my meeting that night and I was kind of bragging to myself. It's like, I didn't even move my car today. Like, 'cause I was kind of proud of myself. I just stayed home and worked and didn't move my car. And a voice came to me and said, he didn't help anybody either. So it's like, I get these little I get these little nudges, and I will say that it relates back to that idea about unmanageability, because that's I'll take this any day of the week over that not being able to, like, the choice is really very clear to me. It's like, I can be involved in this and I can have a relationship with God and I can make avail myself to help others whenever and wherever possible, inside and outside the rooms, or I can go on this insane path that is quite lonely and isolating and eventually is going to lead to me drinking, and then that incomprehensible demoralization, and that's going to take over, and I'm not going to be, I just cannot drink like a normal person. And I've said this multiple times, that I knew from the first time I drank, I couldn't drink like a normal person. I know that to this day. I've really have accepted the first step. There's time, again, I've not been the best. I've done many bad things in sobriety. I've made bad choices. I've had periods where this thing has waxed and waned. But I will just say that, being plugged back into this and will keep me away from that. Like, it's just never gonna. I fundamentally believe I can never drink like, a quote unquote normal person, meaning I can't control it. So yeah.
Thank you for
Thank
sharing.
you.
Page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friend had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I have learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from what moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Kurt?
So yeah, that's kind of what I had just been talking about. It's funny how, there's suggestions around here for the program. You come to meetings on a regular basis. You find yourself a sponsor, get into the step works, read the book, help others, all these things. It's funny to me how, if you don't do those things, how quickly you can forget things that you know are true. There's these blank spots he's talking about. It kind of reminds me of the whole hot stove thing. Like, it only takes one time to put your hand on a hot stove, and you're probably never going to do that again. But with alcohol, it's different. It's like we can forget something. I don't even know how to explain it because it doesn't even make sense. But this blank spots, willpower is not going to help. Self-knowledge is not going to help. And if for me personally, I know this for a fact. If I'm not exposing myself regularly to this program and working on my relationship with God as I understand him, and working with other alcoholics and talking to my sponsor and doing all these things, then I'm leaving myself open for a blank spot to come in play, where I could suddenly somehow think of drinks. I mean, you would think, as much as I've gone through with it, I would never ever have a blank spot again, but that's not what the book says. So I know, like my first sponsor told me, he said, "I've got good news and bad news." I said, "What's the good news?" He goes, "You don't ever have to drink and use again." I said, "What's the bad news?" He goes, "Alcohol and drugs ain't your problem." And even though I found out later that that was true, but at the same time, even knowing that later on, I still choose to Later on in that year and a half, I'm still thinking in my head, if I can just get rid of the alcohol, then I'm gonna be fine. If I just get the alcohol out of my life, I'm gonna be okay. It doesn't work, because I have a disease, and it's never gonna go away. And it's amazing. Even without alcohol, the disease is still there, and it's still gonna make me miserable if it's not treated. And this program is the treatment for my disease. So that's what I got on that.
Right. Yeah, those blind spots for me used to be I just it would just always baffle me to no end that like I would have a great day and no absolutely no intention, swore it off and would somehow end up drunk. And it would just again the insanity would ensue and there would be again periods of time of sobriety and periods of time when I could somewhat hold it together. But those blind spots are funny. And you know it's interesting. You listen to people and they talk about, I was out for stayed sober for this long. And then it's a real sobering reality check that no, I don't think anybody's immune from it. These blind spots are they're very real and they're very serious. And there are a lot of people that aren't able to ever come back after they have a slip because of something bad happens out there, or just who knows what can happen. So I will say, yeah, I mean, it's so and we have a design for living here, and the longer I've gotten into this and the more I've gotten into this, it's somewhat like a layer of an onion. I learn more every time, and I used to think that I would, I can't have a I'll never use it and I'd really try not to say that stuff anymore because I'll never drink again or anything because I don't if provided I keep fit spiritual condition I do believe I'm kept safe and protected but keeping fit spiritually it's a rigorous path that must be maintained and there are the times in my life especially in sobriety that I haven't really focused on maintaining it's not as if things have got like I said I've had some pretty negative and pretty bad feelings in sobriety that were quite literally, all self-imposed. There's always a chance to be involved here to help out to get a sponsor. I mean, it's not as if I wasn't didn't have any. I have a vehicle, or I could walk anywhere. I get to a meeting anytime I want. Really, there's so many in this day and age, and so many people willing to help. But there have been times when I haven't made it incumbent upon myself to do that, and I think I'm opening myself up to those blind spots when I'm not being really active and forthright about my recovery. And let me read the rest of that. So yeah, and I guess I don't need to say it again, but it really, the idea of a relapse of just it was just so crushing back then. I cannot imagine what it would feel like now because I just remember back then that it was just absolutely awful, and the shame and guilt I would feel. I tell people that was one of the worst things that I used to just walk around with so much shame and so much guilt, and the steps allowed me to get rid of that and to have a mechanism to remove the shame and the guilt through amends and through, relationship with God. So I will say, yeah, the blind spots are something that are I think about more than I used to. And this thing is deadly serious and it's to be treated accordingly. So
Thank
thank you,
you for
Bill.
sharing.
Our last reading of the night will be page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Yeah, and so like I was just saying, it says somewhere else in the big book, if we are to recreate our lives, and God's going to have to be a part of it. God, as we understand him, is going to have to be a part of that recreation. And it's stunning to me that it's been over 30 years since this whole thing started, and I feel like I'm just now genuinely over the last year truly understanding the dilemma that I have and accepting it. And it's that I guess I'm really, really hard-headed. But it's and paradoxically, instead of like a feeling of defeat, it's a feeling of victory, because, man, okay, I admit it. I can't win. I cannot fix me. I'm never going to be able to fix me. However, there's another step two that tells me that there is a power I can come to believe that there's a power that can restore me to sanity. And we talked about the insanity of that first drink, you know, and it must come from a higher power. It's where my defense comes from. It does not come from self-reliance, does not come from self-knowledge. Trust me, I've done all of that to the extreme. It's never worked. But the surrender to even the possibility that there's a higher power that could help me, whether that be Alcoholics Anonymous, whether whatever it may be, whether it be the God, you know, of your understanding, but something other than me needs to be kind of in lead here, in position. You know what I mean? Because I've had my chance, and it's just never worked out and very well. And it's been a lot of years of doing that, bouncing back and forth. And it really feels good to be in the program. It feels good to be working with a sponsor and getting into this material and working through these steps and coming to meetings and going into treatment facilities and doing all these things, you know, that I've been doing over the last year. And, you know, I've been noticing the little things, you know, just like some of the nice don't promise stuff, you know, just taking a little bit more interest in my fellows, a little bit less interest in myself. And, you know, just, you know, kind of starting to know a little bit of new freedom and a new happiness, you know, that comes from just admitting and accepting what my problem is. And then I'm seeking, you know, power greater than myself that can help me with that. And it feels really good to be here and to be sober. And I'm grateful to this group to let me speak tonight. So thank you for having me, and glad to be here. Thank you.
That always used to be, when you say that, that always used to be so puzzling to me when it says, once more, the alcoholic of certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. I understand that at this point, but I remember when I got sober, that always just seemed so mysterious to me. It's like, well, I can't, what do you mean I can't? Like, I can't think my way out of this. I can't. And this was years into the program, I would think, well, I can. You know, I didn't know if I fully bought that, but now the longer I've been in and the better my life has gotten and the more I've spiritually grown, I'm still like a, I guess like a, I don't know, a green shoot of hope or in certain ways. That's how I feel, but it's better than it has been in the past. And I will say that was always mysterious to me. And it's like, no, to me, I guess my interpretation of this is that God, as I understand him, is the only thing that can keep me, it can keep in between me and that first drink. And really that's it. And provided I maintain spiritual condition, I'll be okay. It is very easy for myself, and I'm probably other people in here can relate to that. Falling off of that spiritual path can be really easy because of that problem of selfishness. So it's like I've got to constantly be doing what I can to think about other people because I, you know, it's not only will it get me to drink, it's just I just have this tendency to think about myself all the time, and everything revolves around me, and that's a prison in a real way. And I just get so many times in my life, it's just gotten me so miserable because it's like thinking everything is about me or thinking this person does this or this is about me. And it's like, no, I'm just a person, just like the other 7 or 8 billion on this planet that, you know, I'm just trying to do my best, just like them. Not many things are personal. So I would say that that's one thing that, you know, just this idea that if I can constantly just get out of my, and it really is a thing of action. I can't think my way out of thinking about myself. When I try to do that, guess what it comes back to? I just start thinking about myself again. And that's really, that's a prison. And I hate to say it. I know it'll happen again. And that's why, one thing I really have learned in this program, and I have tried to take into other areas of my life, sometimes successfully, sometimes not successfully, this idea that I just need to constantly be thinking about and acting in the best will of other people, because that's the best way to get out of myself. And that's like some of the freedom that's come from this program. It's like, you know, if I'm thinking about you, or I'm thinking about you, or I'm doing something to help people in the program or outside of the program, I do have a job where I have the capacity to be of service to others. And I really do kind of take that seriously because it is a way out of the prison of self. And so, yeah, to kind of circle back to what I said up front, I understand that now. If I don't keep in spiritual condition, then A drink is very likely to ensue. It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but I will get miserable enough and uncomfortable enough eventually that it will probably seem like the only reasonable solution, and welcome to hell yet again. And that's really not where I want to be, so I will continue to stay involved and active and be an active participant in my recovery. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Let's give Kirk a right round of applause. We're going to pass around the seventh tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourage each person here to contribute to a fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name's Kirk, and I'm an alcoholic.
Kirk.
Two things. One is there is going to be a New Alcoholics Anonymous meeting taking place over for any of the people that may live out in the Suffolk area. It's going to be at Sentara Obisi Hospital. It's a daily refreshments meeting. It's every Sunday from 11 to 12 o'clock. It does not say when that starts, so I'm guessing it's already started. Then on Saturday, excuse me, December 13th, my home group, which is a Gracious Living group of Smithfield, is going to have a holiday dinner. It's going to be starting. The food starts at 6:30, and then we are going to have a speaker that's going to be speaking at 7:30. David F. here will be speaking, and so come on out and join the fun.
Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you were interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Thank you. Literature is available on the table over there. If you need a book, please see me, and we'll get you a book. Anything, any informational paperwork you can just take. Reminder: smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella down here on Colonial across from Bank of America. Again, let's thank Kirk and Rhett.
You guys.
Good job, Rhett. Yeah, you too, man. That's really good.
After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and thank them. Grant has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
Hey, Grant.
Vision for you, big point, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. Your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. And God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. We have a fierce way to close.
Can you shut up?
Okay, we'll be all done.
Our Father.
Our Father. Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.